offering our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's afternoon satsang. The last we met you was before the birthday celebrations, and it's so wonderful to be back with you after the birthday celebrations. I think, to put it in a modern way, the hangover is still there, but it's so wonderful to be joining you in this afternoon satsang. And as always, with me is Arvind. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem. It has really been a phenomenal and fantastic week. I don't know what else to say. Let me say that being in Prashanthi Nilayam, being at Radio Sai, having information and knowledge about what is happening, where, everything, and having a staff badge which allows me to walk into any place without much of a fuss. In spite of that, I have not been able to, you know, go through everything that has been happening in the past 10 days or so. So much has been happening. But you know, one thing that is common in all that has been happening everywhere is that feeling of love, that bonding with Swami. It's so amazing. It's so magical. I still feel, you know, I have got a lot to revisit or even visit for the first time via the Radio Sai channel on YouTube, and I will go and see, because so much has happened. I just don't know where to begin, where to end. It's been a phenomenal 10 days at Prashanthi Nilayam, and I'm just overwhelmed.
Absolutely. I mean, even now, even as you're saying that, there are at least two more exhibitions which I'm yet to visit. There is an exhibition by the overseas devotees in the Satsang Hall. There is an exhibition in the Music College which was for most people unknown. You know, the students of the Music College have, it seems, put up a very beautiful museum on, exhibition on music and music and spirituality, in fact, and that's the theme of their the exhibition they put up there. I think some of these things really we've not seen. And the past few days, one thing which, as you said, which really overwhelms you is, you know, whether you're a devotee or Swami, even if you're a visitor who's just coming by, I think this feeling of an entire town celebrating somebody and people from all around the world coming to join that, because it's not just the celebrations in the Kulwant Hall or celebrations in a particular place in the Hillview Stadium. We just have to walk around the town to see, you know, every shopkeeper celebrating it, every lane's decorated, the main roads decorated, everything, you know, the railway station being so beautifully well lit. It really fills you with so much of admiration to, you know, what love Swami is inspired in so many people. I think maybe some of the highlights of the event is the orchestra which was there in the morning and the evening.
Definite highlight.
Especially in the evening, because we were talking to one of the coordinators of that event, Brother Sai Shravanam, who's one of the persons instrumental in bringing them together. It was a 90-minute program, but it was no less than a 1.5-year effort to put that together. And probably at this time, just fondly remember Mandalin Srinivasan, because he was supposed to be one of the key coordinators for that event. There was one Mr. Michael Herting, who was the composer for the symphony. Along with him, Mandalin Srinivasan was supposed to be the other coordinator, supposed to be doing the Indian notations. Of course, he had done a lot of it before he moved on. So remembering him fondly, but you know, it's a 1 year's effort, and some of the musicians coming here for the first time, and probably many of our listeners and people who watch the program would not know, some of them were even from the Royal Philharmonic in London, some of the musicians. Most of the musicians from Italy, they were the finest. Like some of the, there was a player on the timpani who was supposed to be the best in the world. In the Indian, of course, you know, we had Karaikudi Mani. He's the name behind that instrument that he played, the Gangam, and the best Ghatam player, the best Ganjira player. Then you had a man on the African drums who was phenomenal. You know, he's right from Africa. And then there was a singer, and Sai Shravanam was telling us so much about that singer. That singer cannot speak a sentence in English. Forget English, he cannot speak any language which any other person in that orchestra can understand. All the communication with him was happening in gestures, and he was brought in. I mean, his voice was magical. I don't know from where they got him. He was right from the desert, it seems.
You're speaking of the person who started...
Right, who started the orchestra, right? You know, he sang that particular Arabic verse.
Speaking of that person who sang, as you said, you know, I must confess that because of other things that had to be done, I missed this entire orchestra. And definitely, I've seen parts of it now. I'm going to keep aside 2 hours to sit and watch it in complete detail. But I definitely heard that alap, that Allahu Akbar alap in the beginning that this person began with. And, you know, it felt so beautiful because right now in the nation, they're speaking about debates on intolerance and all this. And I was thinking, Swami, at Prashant Zilnium, you created such a heaven that though, you know, it is, if you see Prashant Zilnium, for example, most of the rituals and practices followed seem to be a little on the Hindu side. You know, in such a place, on the birthday of Swami, the first notes that are being sung are Allahu Akbar. I was thinking, Swami, you not only have taught us tolerance, you have actually taught us to celebrate the diversity. And now when you're saying that that person could hardly speak a sentence or a few words in any of the languages that any of the members of the orchestra knew, it just reinforces the fact, the truth that Swami always proclaimed, that there is only one language, the language of the heart. If they could communicate and you know, at the end of the orchestra, this person is going around hugging and embracing everyone because possibly that is the only thing that he could communicate.
Right.
Again, another proof of there is only one language, the language of the heart. You're speaking about Karaikudi Mani, the god of Mridangam, as he's called. I'm reminded of the god of the tabla, with whom I, as a group, we got a chance to see some things, you know. Ustad Zakir Hussain ji, who had come. The whole thing, you know, Prem, when you see on the evening of 23rd, there was supposed to be a Jhulotsavam program in the Hillview Stadium. And the showers of grace, if I can call it, because, you know, it's unfair to call it showers of grace when God gives rains in summer and then when call them as something else when you are having your own plans and you don't want it to upset you like that. Honestly speaking, you know, none of the members of the Prashanti music group who were supposed to sing for the Jhula Utsav that day, none of them seemed sad. Everyone had that kind of peace and joy of, you know, we are here to make Swami happy. If Swami is happy by having rains and cancelling the program, let it be so. The next day, you know, Prem, when we all got a chance, I also got a chance by Swami's grace to be some part of this Prashanti music group, I was seeing, you know, when the whole way, the whole manner in which the evening of the 24th unfolded, and what we had seen of the interaction between some of the members and Ustad Zakir Hussain, I really felt Swami wanted the Jhulotsavam with his students and Zakir Hussain also. Because in no way did Zakir Hussain feel like a person who is not Swami's student. You know, in the music college, he interacted with many of the music college students and others. It was pure, absolute, unsullied, sheer delight for them to, you know, because in that instrument, he is literally a god.
Right.
And then he told some of our Prashanti Bhajan group singers to sing. And we had Brother Ravi Kumar singing that Alap Bhajan Allahu Akbar. It was so beautiful. Prem, Ustad Zakir Hussain was sitting on the chair, and as this brother started singing, he immediately pushed the chair, sat down, and he said, "No, how can he sat?" And you know, as the formality, they were getting him snacks and tea. He flatly refused all that. He was all focus on this brother singing that bhajan. The whole bhajan was sung. After which he said, "You know, somebody just asked Brother Amay actually. In fact, asked him." About, I forget the term they have for it, these musicians, you know, they lock themselves up in solitary confinement.
Right, for 30, 40 days and they do
for many days and they just practice on a certain beat. It's like a sadhana. And there's a word for it, I forget that word. So, mentioning that word, Brother Amay asked, "Sir, can you tell anything about this?" He became silent for almost a minute. Then he said, "You know, this is something very, very personal. And I don't speak about it anywhere. But here I'm feeling like sharing it." And then he was sharing. He said that he has had 3 such sessions where he has locked himself up in solitude only with he and his tabla and practiced on a beat. He said at the end of 16 or 18 days, he said that an angel appeared. An angel appeared and, you know, gave him a kind of a beat. It's a, you know, I wonder what is it that could be gifted to him, because in the performance we saw that simultaneously he was playing three beats one over the other. A triple beat going on top of which a four beat is going on which top of which a ten beat is going on. It was mind-boggling, but he was given a beat and he was so thrilled with that. And he said he came out of that sadhana, he went to his guru, his own father Alaraka ji, and he went and told him that this is what has been gifted to me. And as he was narrating what had been gifted, he says that his father completed the latter half of what he had received. He was simply amazed and thrilled that his father already knows that. And his father said that during his first such session, he said that the angel came and gave him this very same beat. So he said it was a very, very divine experience. And he said, yeah, that angel, whatever name you may call it with, yeah, you may call it Swami, you may call... So he has no doubt that it was Swami who gifted that to him. And he said it feels so wonderful and like a homecoming. And those of us who have missed can of course watch it on YouTube. In between the concert program also, when he was speaking, one could see the humility and love that he has towards Swami. You know, it was such a beautiful sight, Prem, to see him walk. I felt like, you know, sometimes the sun is too bright to look at. You look at the sun's reflection and you get an estimate of the grandeur of the sun. I felt like that looking at the face of the Ustad. I felt that he was a perfect reflection of divinity, which Swami is, and seeing the reflection of divinity in such splendor in him, I just realized that, you know, it is something to remind ourselves every moment that we are living with what divinity, what splendor, what majesty. Because somebody whom the whole world worships as a god, he comes and he says all this, he's dedicated right in the beginning, even before he played his first note, he dedicated the whole thing only to Swami's grace. And he said, I'm not playing, it is what he is only playing. You know, that's why I said I couldn't make out whether you can say that he's not a student, because he definitely was a true student of God. And that evening program also, everything fell in place. You know, it was just simply perfect. I don't know what else to say. It felt so beautiful. I'm speaking so much about this because I got to witness and be part of this. I missed out the other thing. So, having been part of this little part of the birthday celebrations, I can only estimate how much grand each one of the parts would be. And I definitely want to spend the next 1 week going back to each of those parts and reliving them and feeling the thrill of divinity that Swami blessed us and the whole world with.
Definitely. In fact, one thing which one of our brothers shared about what the Ustad had told them in the music college, I think for anybody who is looking at learning music or taking up music, he said something which is very profound. And you know, you can imagine what has brought him to this kind of repute and why he is revered so much. You know, he said, never think that I'm going to contribute something to music. When you start learning something, you know, here is somebody who has given a face to tabla. I mean, internationally, of course, tabla has always been an instrument which is very dear to all our hearts, but somebody who has taken it to a global stage.
In fact, he has changed the tabla from an accompanying instrument to a lead instrument.
To a solo instrument. And, you know, such a person, he could definitely claim that he has given such, he has contributed so much to the instrument and music. But he said, never, never look at yourself as somebody who is going to contribute to music. Always look at music as a living entity, a divine personage whom you worship. And if music chooses you, you will be blessed. He said, that should always be your approach. In fact, those of us who saw the live broadcast, you know, they would have seen that he carried his own instruments. I mean, I was surprised to see that, because when I saw that, you know, here is such a, you know, huge personality. He's coming with his own instruments. He could have had 100 disciples who were ready to carry that instrument. And he carried his own instrument. And in fact, Brother Mohan, who was in the website team, he was telling that when he was offered a flower and they said, you can give this in, you know, places at Swami's sannidhi, we'll carry the tabla for you. He said, no, I'll carry my own tabla. Don't bother. He said, but you'll have to offer this flower. He said, yeah, no problem, I can manage it. So he grabbed the flower, he put the tabla around, and you know, even in spite of all that.
There were three tablas actually.
Right. Mm-hmm. He carried all of them, and in fact, Nishikant sir, who was a disciple of Zakir Hussain, who was a lecturer in our music college, he used to say that wherever he goes, you know, even when he's traveling, even when he's going around, he will always carry the tabla which he's supposed to perform on. You know, even when he's traveling by flight or something, you will always, and it's 6 kgs, 7 kgs, 8 kgs, how much ever it is, he always carries it himself. It's not anything else, not that anybody else will not handle it with care, but it's the respect they give for that music, for that instrument. I think it's a big lesson for any person who is learning music. And if this is how an instrument is treated by a musician, on the symphony you had 111 musicians, and each one of them worshipped their instrument the same way. And to think of it, all of those players came and performed free. And many, many listeners who saw the program, who listened to the program, will not know this. All of them, in fact, you had the who's who of Carnatic music there. Hmm. Ganesh Kumaresh, the best violinist in India today. You had Sudha Raghunathan, the best Carnatic vocalist, arguably the best. You had Manlin Rajesh. You had Debashish Bhattacharya. You had Shashank. I think he's supposed to be the best flautist in Carnatic music right now. And all of them came free, and they just came to offer their music at Swami's lotus feet.
When you were saying that, I was just thinking, you know, when so many priests who gather together and do a yagna, we call it Atirudra Mahayagna, because so many of them are doing offerings, and when you multiply all their offerings together, it totals up to a number which makes it Atirudra Mahayagna. Is this not also an Atirudra Mahayagna? Because each one of those artists is offering worship in a different manner, in his own manner or in her own manner, but with the same devotion, and as a pandit would probably chant the mantras, and the kind of expertise, you know, we also feel for the Atirudra Mahayagna, we have priests who are Vedic scholars. Each one of them is like a scholar when it comes to that instrument. All of them coming together and offering, it was definitely a Mahayagna. And I feel that is the reason also we had so much of rains. Because any time when there has been a yagna, there has been rains in Prashant Nilayam. And this was definitely a yagna. Yagna also, as we have discussed many times before, also implies a sacrifice. It has involved great sacrifices. And he's sitting here in Radio Sai Prem, both of us are mostly describing sacrifices which we happen to witness or come to know. I'm sure for every sacrifice that we have witnessed, there have been 10 others that are possibly not being reported. I was seeing, you know, the other day, on the birthday morning, I suddenly got a call saying that, will you be ready to, you know, there'll be a floral offering done from the helicopter. Mm-hmm. Could you go and photograph from the skies? I felt, wow, this is a phenomenal opportunity. I agreed for that. So I left early and reached the airport. There I saw a group of about 30 people doing bhajans. Mm-hmm. I too joined them. And later I got to know they were volunteers from Orissa who had come to serve. And they were at the airport to help in loading, transporting, keeping everything ready. They were doing everything. I did not speak to any of them, because each one of them was busy, and I was trying to find out more details about how the helicopter is coming and all that. But whatever little I could gather was this much, that they have been serving there. It's the 90th birthday of Swami. They are missing out everything that is happening, you know, in the sense we think that the crux of all the celebrations is what happens at Kulwanthal. Always we have been thinking that only, because when Swami was there, physically there would be darshan. When Swami is physically not there, there is darshan via the screens and the programs happening in Kulwanthal. But here are volunteers who have never seen anything that has happened, who have possibly not had time to go around and look at all the decorations, even in spite of being at Prashant Nilayam. You know, we had people who were writing to us saying, thank you for, we were not able to come to Prashanti, but you showed us Prashanti from our own homes. So there are so many people who feel bad they are not able to come to Prashanti to witness this. Imagine how bad a person must feel having been able to come to Prashanti but not witnessing all this. And yet on their faces I just saw contentment and joy. They were happy that they are serving Swami in their own way. I mean, I feel that's a huge sacrifice. All said and done, if at all anyone considers that I have possibly done a sacrifice, I feel I have been richly rewarded and reimbursed for it in every sense. I got to see everything, I got to, in a sense, everything. But here are people who did not get any of those. And yet they were so happy, I was so thrilled seeing it. And then later on I got to know that like these, they were volunteers and sevadal in every part. Whether it's in cooking, whether it's in feeding, whether it's in transporting, because there was a huge logistics work that had to be done. Whether it was erecting arches, whether it was erecting pandals, so much of work. And so I just feel just that for every 1,000 people who enjoyed, there were 1,000 others who enjoyed in making these 1,000 enjoy. So really our hearts go to them, hats off to them, and it only humbles us to realize how much of Swami's love, you know, has percolated into the innermost recesses of everyone's hearts.
Absolutely, and that's what makes the birthday so special. Because even as you're saying that every day we, you know, we go attend the program in the mandir, then we happily go to the food counter and pick up our food and eat. We don't realize that those are people who have been working from the morning, who never get a chance to come to this side of the ashram at all. You know, many of them, this time of course we didn't speak to many of them, during the 85th birthday when we spoke to some of those volunteers, they come probably a week or 10 days before the birthday celebrations start, and they are here a couple of days after the birthday celebrations. Throughout that time they don't get darshan at all. Throughout that time they don't get to come near the mandir at all, but they are here for the birthday celebration so that we can enjoy our birthday celebrations better. And that's their offering to Swami. I mean, we call it a sacrifice, but I'm sure that Swami is filling all of them with so much joy. Because, you know, many ways, when you look at it, it was raining, there was slush on the road, moving around was difficult. It was raining even at the place where you're eating the food. But you couldn't find a glum face. You couldn't find somebody not...
It was bright and sunny on the faces.
Absolutely. And that's why I'm saying when... with this orchestra, you know, we are all thrilled to be here doing Swami's birthday. You know, we're all quote unquote devotees, you know, anything is going to make us happy. So I was asking these people who are coordinating this symphony, what about these artists who came? Because he said those who were part of the orchestra as such, many of them are coming here for the first time, coming to India for the first time. They're not devotees of Swami per se. And he said, you know, after the performance, they went back for their dinner. None of them were able to eat. They were all sitting silent. They were just looking at each other's face. They were not able to eat. They were just like, the moment was so heavy on them. They were sitting, you know, because all said and done, I feel that plays Swami's Kulwant Hall or in stadium. You may not know who Swami is. You may not realize that Swami is the avatar of the age or whatever it is. But that love that transpires between Swami and his devotees, I think it fills every inch of that air. And whoever you are, you come and perform that, I think that energy hits you. Like, you know, you might have performed in the best of arenas in the world, but there when you perform, I think that's what happened. You know, be it an African guy or be it Zakir Hussain or be it Swami students, when you perform, that energy is what lifts you. And you know, even for the students' performance that day, these are songs we've heard so many times. They've always performed for Swami, and these voices are familiar, but something transforms it when it is performed that day. In fact, some of our students performed with the orchestra. And some of the people who were members of the orchestra, they were saying that we have not seen a choir like this. Okay, they said this is one of the best. Because he said this is a choir which is having no notes in front of them. They are singing in different scales, and they're doing it without any notations, and they've just picked it up by hearing. Okay, and see, this is what happens, because your base is clear. When you're doing it for Swami, I think you are emotionally and mentally prepared for being molded to anything. You know, you could sit and sing bhajans, you can sit and sing a music concert like what we heard on 24th.
Whether it's Vedam, yes.
And you're even prepared for an orchestra of an international standard.
Exactly, Prem. You know, I was saying we will never be able to comprehensively cover everyone, because so many we just don't know also of the sacrifice made. But I think I will be failing if I miss out on a team that so intimately I got to see, which is our own video team at Radio Sai. It was amazing, Prem. I have never seen such a sacrifice at the physical and mental level, because I feel I have not done like that any time. They were working tireless, the team headed by, you know, Vinod, Himanta, Pradeep, Gokul, Navneet, Sudhir, this whole team, along with the team that had come from Chennai of cameramen.
I think we have to definitely mention that person,
Nandini Ramakrishna.
Nandini Ramakrishna, my God, I mean, such commitment really, really warms your heart, you know, because every time, I mean, I've seen that enthusiasm, that childlike enthusiasm in him. I've not interacted much directly with him.
He's childlike at 65 years of age.
Sai Prakash would say, you know, he would call up and he said, Sai Prakash, I've got this new video mixer. It's brand new. It's the latest. I want to use it for Swami's birthday. You know, I've procured this new camera. I mean, he's got a company of his own. He's got a business of his own. But, you know, he does all this free, and every time something fresh comes in the market, something he procures, he says, I've got this, let's use it for Swami's birthday, let's use it for this function. I think,
exactly.
You know, this kind of love is what...
you know, when you ask him, talk to him about payment, he says, sir, you just pay the cameraman to transport them here and take care of their food, rest I will take care. It is amazing because that equipment is... See, this time we needed a lot of equipment, because especially on the birthday and day before that, you know, there were two venues. And it's not as if like it's one camera or one mic that you can pluck after this program is over and set it up there. There was hardly 15-20 minutes. In fact, after the morning program in the Hillview Stadium, many of the so-called VIPs in their cars didn't reach in time to the Kulwant Hall. But you know, there was no break in the video transmission that went on. Because of these guys who are working tirelessly, many of them didn't sleep many nights. And you know, Prem, you just mentioned that we did it during the 85th birthday. This time we could not do. That is, interviewing so many of the people. One of the reasons we couldn't do was because this time the team decided to go and cover everything, everywhere happening, and was broadcasting it live. If you remember, 85th birthday, we didn't transmit everything live. Only the birthday program was transmitted as a deferred live. Here, everything was transmitted live, and the way they were working, it was amazing to see. And again, it only reinforced the truth that this has to be love of God. Otherwise, nothing else, other than love of God and love for God, nothing else can motivate and inspire people to make what we call as sacrifices like this. It was wonderful. It was definitely a celebration of love. And the beautiful thing is, all this to a great extent has been captured on film, as articles, as radio programs, I'm sure, which will also be coming again and again in the next few weeks, few months, and for years. We can all relive all this and enjoy Swami's love that pervaded the whole space and atmosphere during the 90th birthday celebrations.
I think if we continue, we will not stop at all, because, I mean, definitely, I think what we've spoken is with very, very limited knowledge. You know, we have not spoken to many of the teams which have come in, devotees who have come in. Really, it's with very, very limited knowledge, with little of what we've seen, with little of what we've learned from people who have coordinated. So much more has happened. So much more is happening still. You have the conference going on.
World conference, right? Yes.
Yesterday, the program which we had. I mean, it's so thrilling to see so many people connecting to Swami in their own ways. You know, the people from Turkey performed. The people from Thailand performed. Today, we are having a performance by, I think, Azerbaijan. You know, devotees from there. You have a program from devotees from Mexico. Each of these people connecting to Swami in their own way. And this, I think, this morning I was listening to a play which was coming on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a play on Swami's life. People saying that then Pedda Venkamma Raju came and said this. And then Kondamma Raju came and said this. And in all Western accents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't imagine someone who is born in such an obscure village. He's become so universal. Not only he... And you know, all these names which probably would have never gone to the international stage have become household names now. You know, Ishwaramma, Pedda Venkamma Raju, and all. It's so beautiful, and it really is a sign of a universal master and, you know, divinity who is all pervading.
I think, Prem, you know, we'll probably just take a break, and after the break, get on to what is supposed to be the theme of today's satsang, which is the Ramkatha Rasavahini. Dear listeners, we just couldn't help but allow little vent to our exuberance and joy and satisfaction. It has been so beautiful, and dear listeners, we also want to thank you for going on writing to all of us. Whatever had been written to whichever team, we tried our best, and all the feedback has been dispersed accordingly to whoever you have written to, whether it was the Seva team or the broadcasting team, or whether it was a program that had been conducted in the Mandir. So, though none of the teams, nobody here works for applause or works for such feedback, when it comes spontaneously from all of you, it definitely feels like Swami is giving a pat on everybody's back. So thank you too for having participated so wholeheartedly from wherever across in the globe you have been. You all also have been as integral to this whole birthday celebration as all of us at Prashanthi Nilayam have been. So we'll take this little break. We will play out the name of Lord Rama, after that is our usual custom, after which we will take up the Ramkatha Rasavahini.
Sri Rama Rama Rameti Rame Rame Manorame सहस्रनाम तत्तुल्यं रामनाम वरानने रामनाम वरानने
స్వరూప్ లారా
హ్యాపీ 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 బి హ్యాపీ 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 మేక్ అదర్స్ హ్యాపీ ఆల్ విల్ బి హ్యాపీ గాడ్ విల్ బి హ్యాపీ
జైశ్వరాయ విద్మహే
Welcome to the Streams of Bliss, our series of audio specials, which are pure devotional melodies produced in the Radio Sai Studios as an offering to Bhagawan on his historic 90th birthday celebrations.
Namo Rakapataye, Namo Ganapataye, Namo Pramatapataye, Namaste Astulam Godaraye Kadantaya Vignanashine Shivasutaya Varadamurtaye Namaha
Tapastam Vasutramu
Welcome back, dear listeners. We couldn't resist the temptation to showcase some of the beautiful audios that have been released this birthday. You can pick them up. A lot of audios and video DVDs have made their way to the Sai Blossom store. Do check them out and pick them to your heart's content. We offer our humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, seeking his inspiration to proceed with his beautiful narrative of the Ramayana, the Ramkatha Rasa Vahini. And as always, we welcome Lord Hanuman, who is always present wherever the Ramkatha is sung. In fact, today we will be actually singing the glories of his humility, his love and his devotion to Rama. Because last time we had reached that point in the story where all the Vanaras and the bear army headed by Jambavan, they have zeroed in on Hanuman as a person who alone is capable of crossing the ocean and getting news of Mother Sita, finding Mother Sita in fact. And therefore now Hanuman has prepared himself, and we spoke of how he takes the name of Rama and with the name of Rama grows to a size that is unimaginable, grows so huge, ready to take his leap. You know, when I was reading this prema, I was reminded of how Swami would speak of the two ways in which you have to overcome Dehabhimanam or body consciousness. One is to make yourself so small, make yourself so tiny with Dasoham, saying that I am nothing but the servant of the Lord, and make yourself so small and insignificant because you say that I am nothing, everything is the Lord. That time the chains of Dehabhimanam that bind you just fall away because you are too small for them to bind. Or the other way is to take the method of Soham and say I am divine and become so big that no chain can ever bind you, they just shatter away. It is almost as if Hanuman decided to shift his position from Dasoham to Soham in order to accomplish the task of Rama. He grows to a gigantic size and takes a leap, and Swami writes that even as he leaps, the ground gets pushed underneath and the trees, everything get plucked, and his takeoff happens. Now, after this takeoff happens, what happens along the way is very, very interesting. Basically, Hanuman meets with three challenges. The first challenge that he meets is as he's soaring across. Let us remember that Hanuman is not actually flying, it's just a jump. But in order to describe it, there is no other word, so we call it the flight across the ocean. So in his flight, as he's crossing the ocean, a mountain peak by the name Mainaka rises out from the ocean and comes up. Now Mount Mainaka, that's a detailed separate story, had benefited a lot from Vayu, the god of wind, who is also the father of Hanuman. So having benefited so much from Vayu, Mount Mainaka feels that it is his duty to be of some service to Hanuman, because Hanuman is Vayu's son. And therefore Mount Mainaka rises from the ocean and tells Hanuman, "Oh Hanuman, stop. You know, let me make your task a bit easier. You have to jump across the entire ocean. Take a rest on me.
Pit stop."
A pit stop, yeah. Because instead of becoming... Now, we had seen how 100 yojanas is the distance that has to be jumped. If Mount Mainaka comes up, you need not actually jump 100 yojanas. You can split it into two smaller jumps, right? So that is what Mainaka offers to Hanuman. But Hanuman says, "Oh Mainaka, I am very touched by your offer. But you know, I am on a task now given to me by my Lord. So therefore, I am in a bit of a hurry. So please don't force me to stay and eat the fruits that are growing on you, of course, and rest a while and enjoy your hospitality. Because when I am in Ramakarya, I cannot go into Kamakarya, where Kama is desire. I can't do all this, but I am so touched by your loving offer. So definitely, though I will not be stopping and taking rest, I will make a touchdown on you, you know. So therefore, like a customary, like just like a, what do you say, just for the sake of making Mount Mainaka feel that I have helped Hanuman in some manner, Hanuman just briefly touches. It's almost like how you do a hop, step and jump in a triple jump. Just let one touch on Mount Mainaka and then continues along his way.
And after this obstacle is won over, the other one which he comes across is a demon, a demoness actually, by name Surasa. And this again arises from the waters, and she is actually a serpent. And this Asura has a boon from Lord Brahma that, you know, she's a huge serpent, that whoever passes by that way would become the food of this serpent. In fact, the actual boon is we'll have to enter through her mouth and then exit. And only then they can, you know, move on, which essentially means they become her food.
Move on to the upper realms.
Right, exactly. So, you know, this serpent rises and stops Hanuman and says, "You cannot go without entering my mouth." So Hanuman makes an offer. He says, "You know, if this is a boon that you have from Brahma, then let me finish my task. I'm going on Ramakarya, a task which is given by Lord Rama himself. After I complete it, I'll come back and I'll offer myself to you. Then you can eat me. You're free to eat me." So Surasa insists that, "No, you can't do that. You have to become my food. There's no way you can go by without, because it's after all a boon from Lord Brahma himself." So then Hanuman says, all right, and he starts growing in size. So he starts becoming so large, and this demoness is no less. So she also starts growing and opening her mouth big enough to still engulf Hanuman. And after she has opened her mouth, you know, really, really largely, Hanuman quickly reduces his size, becomes a small form, smaller form, as we all beautifully sing in the Hanuman Chalisa, Sukshma Rupa. You know, he becomes a small form and immediately enters into the mouth of this serpent and flies out. And then he says, I have fulfilled, you know, the boon that you have from Lord Brahma. So Surasa is very thrilled, and in fact she says that this was also a part of the test which was given to you, and I'm so thrilled that you've, you know, won through it without causing harm to yourself. So you have my blessings that whatever task you're going to accomplish, don't worry, you will be very, very successful in it. And this is the second obstacle that he has to face.
And then as Hanuman is moving ahead, he meets a third obstacle, a sea monster. She's also a demoness, and her name is Simhika. Simhika is a special boon. The boon is that when she catches hold of the shadow, she is able to catch the object itself. And as Hanuman is flying over the ocean, Simhika grabs the shadow of Hanuman, and Hanuman is stuck, and she tries to swallow him because the shadow is in her hand. If she swallows the shadow, the person also goes in, and that's how Hanuman is now swallowed by Simhika. But so determined he is on fulfilling his task that even as Simhika swallows, he flies, zips through so fast through her that he rips apart the other end of the body, of Simhika's body, and comes flying out. Simhika instantly meets with her death, and later we get to know that she is actually another angel that has fallen from grace and had to don the form of a Rakshasi. So she is redeemed by the touch of a devotee. That is one more beautiful point here, you know, a true devotee's touch is also redeeming. We have seen in the Ramkatha Rasavahini how Rama, when he annihilates the demons, many of them when they are dying, I think most of them or all of them, when they are dying, they are so thrilled that they have been killed by Rama, because they know that their redemption is assured when it happened at the hands of the Lord. The same kind of redemption happens for Simhika also when she is killed by Hanuman before he proceeds ahead. And having overcome these three obstacles, Hanuman reaches the shores of Lanka. The interesting point here is, Prem, if we see the Ramkatha Rasavahini, Swami completes this whole thing in a single sentence. But on many other occasions during his discourses, Bhagwan has narrated and dilated on this journey of Hanuman from the shores, from the Indian shores to the Lankan shores, and they give a lot of insights and inspiration for every spiritual aspirant.
And this thing which Swami brings out in this particular episode, where he says that these three obstacles are representative of the three gunas, and each one represents one form of obstacle, that is sattvic obstacle, rajasic obstacle, and a tamasic obstacle. And one thing which always Swami reiterates, we've been going through this ever since we started the Ramakatha, that Swami says that the entire Ramayana is the play of the three gunas. It's very significant, because when we were doing the other program, when we came across this discourse where Swami speaks about the three gunas, you know, we often think of the three gunas as attributes of, you know, characteristics. You know, he's a sattvic person, he's a very rajasic person, or this is a very sattvic activity, or this is a very rajasic food. You know, we think of it as attributes, but actually if you see, I mean, when we were going through that discourse, I think it's part of Sankhya Yoga in Hindu philosophy, where they say that entire creation, whatever you see as multiplicity, has come because of the play of the three gunas. You know, if you see from the one becoming the many, the whole modus operandi is given through the three gunas.
I remember a nice little presentation made by the students in Bhagwan's presence to explain this. They showed, even in fact this was also shown in the Vidyavahini exhibition that was so beautifully done by the children. So there was this girl, she was explaining, she was saying how the entire world is actually come from the same source, but appears to be so different. So she put a prism, and the prism, you know, one prism split white light into seven, and the, there was the other prism that was combining the seven into one. Now that is one way of showing variety. I remember the three gunas, the primary colors, red, RGB, red, green and blue, they're called primary because scientifically, with these three colors, all the different colors and shades that you can ever see with the human eye can be created. So the entire variety we see in colors, however deep, however light, however beautiful, however whatever you see about colors, has been created with red, green and blue, these three. And you know, if you make a disc where one third of the disc is red, one third is green, one third is blue, the correct green, correct red and correct blue, because blue itself has many shades. In a software, you actually have numbers to denote that exact blue.
Right.
So if you have that and you spin that wheel, it becomes white. Because ultimately there's only one, and that one apparently has split into three RGB, with which the entire diversity becomes possible. So the students in their presentation said that the one becomes into these three gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas. The one is beyond the gunas, because white, in white you neither see red, neither you see green, nor do you see blue. And yet, all the three exist in it. So they said the Lord is one who has all the three gunas, but he is beyond the gunas. And yet, with these three gunas, the entire creation comes into being.
Absolutely, because it's a very complex thing. I mean, if you see that particular section of Hindu philosophy, it says about how the five elements become the many through these three gunas, through the interaction to the three gunas. And that's why Swami would say that the Ramayana is a perfect example of, you know, transcending these three gunas. As you said, when you put it perfectly in those three discs, you get the white color. It's not giving up sattva, giving up rajas, or giving up tamas, but it's that perfect balance of the three. And that's why Swami would reiterate, especially in the Ramkatha, in many, many sections, in the discourses which Swami gives, how you deal with things which come in each of these flavors. When something comes as sattva, when something comes as rajas, you know, how you deal when Swami speaks about the Balakhandam, the three women whom he encounters, you know, be it, starts with
Tataki,
Ahalya, and then Mother Sita, how you respond to that. And similarly, in this part, as we spoke about last week when we gave that introduction about Sundarakandam, in Sundarakandam, the devotee becomes the hero of this part of the narrative. So here, Hanuman actually represents Lord Rama. And when you say that he represents Lord Rama, as we always have said, Rama represents the soul, Rama represents the sadhaka and what he is supposed to do. So when you talk of Hanuman's, you know, this particular part where he is facing these three obstacles, it is very important to see it as a sadhaka facing three types of obstacles in his goal, you know, in the pursuit of his goal, and how he responds to these three obstacles.
It is, as you said, the ultimate goal is to go beyond the gunas, because if ultimate goal is merger with God and becoming one with the Lord, one has to go beyond the gunas. So, therefore, a sadhaka must know how to deal when he comes up, when he comes face to face with sattvic obstacles. Here, Mount Mainaka is considered as a sattvic obstacle. How one should deal when he comes with a rajasic obstacle. Here, Surasa is considered as a rajasic obstacle. And finally, Simhika, the tamasic obstacle, how one should deal. I think, Prem, we will take a break, because let us sing and revel in the glory of Hanuman, the perfect sadhaka, who is an example for us to emulate, who will teach us how to recognize whether an obstacle is sattvic, rajasic and tamasic. And not only that much, having recognized whether the obstacle is sattvic, rajasic or tamasic, how should we respond to it so that we are not swerved from our spiritual path? All this after the break, but this is not just a break, this is a time when we contemplate and offer our gratitude to Hanuman for having gifted us with this beautiful knowledge.
Thank you.
Back to the story, the part of the story where we are in, and we were talking about the inner significance of that, of where Lord Hanuman is faced with the first obstacle in the form of the peak, which offers him respite for a moment. And Swami would often say that this is a sign of a sattvic obstacle. That is, you know, the person who is stopping you or the person who is suggesting that you know, take it easy does not mean to harm you, does not mean to really impede your progress, but at the same time, in a way, it is an obstacle for your goal. And the ability to sense this and treat the intention of the person, at the same time not lose your focus. Swami would say that that's exactly what Hanuman did. You know, he pleases. Swami would very often say, you know, always speak obligingly. You cannot always oblige, but you should always speak obligingly. I think it's a perfect example of that quote here. Because here Hanuman does not want to oblige because it's going to be, slow down his progress. But at the same time, he knows that the intention of the offer is absolutely pure, and that intention has to be responded to.
You know, I'm reminded of how Swami would speak to all the students, sometimes in Trai, sometimes in Prashanti, before the vacations. And he would, you know, almost like plead with us that try to follow the hostel schedule as much as possible. Have fun, enjoy with your parents, but don't, you know, indulge too much into the senses. You know, it was nothing but pure love and concern that would come. That is the difference between divine love and worldly love. You know, Swami's love is not meant for the body and the mind, it's for the progress of the soul. But how much ever worldly love may try, it somehow tries to please the body and mind. It would often happen that when students, we go home, our parents, out of genuine affection and love for us only, would tell that, see, you are so starved in your hostels, you don't get such rich food. Come on, you know, let's have a... they would not call it a binge, but let's go to restaurants, have good food, you know, enjoy, go to the movies, go to the malls, have fun, enjoy, because you have been restricted from all this for so much time. Now, I feel this is something like a sattvic obstacle, because the parents and family don't mean bad. They don't want to actually harm you. But out of their concern, where they feel that they want to see you happy, they are doing it. But at the same time, that is something that will take you away from your spiritual path, overindulgence in the senses. So at such times, that is what we have to do. We have to learn from Hanuman that we need to speak obligingly and use diplomacy and learn how to you have to learn how to speak and act in a manner that doesn't hurt the person. Because all said and done, as you rightly said, the intention of the person is not bad. So without hurting the other person, at the same time ensuring that you are not being swerved from your path, go ahead and go on the spiritual path. The next obstacle that Hanuman met is, as you said, Surasa. Surasa is a rajasic obstacle. Because here, this Surasa, what you can't directly say what Surasa did also is wrong, because it's a boon given by Brahma. There's nothing wrong. Actually, if you have a debate, people may stand divided. Some may say Surasa did wrong, some will say why? That is a boon from Brahma, it's her nature, what can she do? So these are rajasic obstacles where things appear to be right only in some perspective. Yet it is wrong for a person on the spiritual path. I remember when we were doing this satsang on non-vegetarianism, one of the points that came is Swami says, you may have some positives of meat, but for a spiritual person, it is an absolute no-no. So while in the world, social world, you may say that eating meat is, what's wrong in eating meat? It gives me protein. For a spiritual person, it's a strict no-no. At such situations, what you have to do is you have to use intelligence. You have to use intelligence to ensure that you are not trapped. That is what Hanuman did over here. Because this was a situation where it is right. it is not as if anything Surasa is doing wrong. You can't directly kill Surasa, you know, because she is just doing her duty. So you can't harm the other person. At the same time, you can't please the other person also, because it definitely is going to impede you from the spiritual path. At such time, like Hanuman, we have to make use of intelligence. Hanuman becomes so big, even before she can think of eating him, he suddenly becomes very small and escapes. He fulfills the condition with his intelligence, at the same time doesn't allow any compromise on his behalf. That is how we have to deal with rajasic obstacles.
Very true, because that's the perfect example. Rajasic is, at the face of it, it does not appear wrong. And at the face of it, it appears like the norm in the society, or things like, you know, vegetarianism, of course, if you really go by what Swami says, Swami has clearly said no. One classic example, especially when you say this, let's say about the organization, we talk about the organization, you know, you have good activity on the one hand. On the other hand, you need funds to be collected. You know, you need funds to do good work. So there are a lot of people who say that as long as good work happens, it doesn't matter if you ask people for money. It doesn't, I mean, what is wrong in a fundraiser? Like, suppose you see NGOs which, you know, work in the world outside today. You have a fundraiser, you call a celebrity, you call a sportsman, and through an event you raise money and you use it for good work. There's nothing wrong in that. I mean, nobody would say it's wrong. You know, there are these haves. You kind of, in a very genuine way, take it from the haves and use it for the have-nots. There's nothing wrong in that. But the moment you bring Swami's name into it, Swami says, this is how I want my organization to run. Right? No collecting money. Money comes out of the people's spontaneous sacrifice. And whatever is the money there, you do activity with that. Right? And so this is Swami's way of doing the things. So even though the norms in the society may say that there's nothing wrong in, you know, doing it a certain way, you say, no, this is the way Swami wants it, so I stick to this. And just comparing the two obstacles, the sattvic one and the rajasic one, if you see the sattvic one, what is more important when you face a sattvic obstacle? You know, a lot of us face this, as you said, that example of trying to maneuver around what our parents and relatives would say when you go back home. You know, many times that feeling of being greater than the rest, you know, self-righteousness, that is what will make us arrogant. You know, this is what Swami wants. I am following what Swami wants. You dare not tell me what is, you know, something which is not to be followed. So in the way of Swami saying that this is how Hanuman handled it and this is how you have to handle it, what is necessary there is, you know, humility. Humility will give you the right attitude to handle sattvic obstacles. If you see the second one, rajasic obstacles, you need, of course, the tool which you use is yukti, but what you need to handle rajasic properly is complete surrender. You have no questions. You know, this is what Swami has told. How much ever it might not appeal to my logic and reasoning, I might not be able to explain it to you, but this is how Swami wants it. I will do it this way.
And that is why I feel, Prem, that the organization at Mudanalli has failed so horribly in this, because the example that you gave, it just triggered off this fund collecting. I feel at the face of the slightest rajasic obstacle, they just stumbled and fallen flat on the face in a manner unimaginable before, and going directly and flouting Swami's word. You know, as you said, you can't use logic to justify it. What's wrong in this? Because from a worldly point of view, it appears to be nothing greatly wrong. Right. But as you said, you need surrender, where you say that if Swami has said this, and whatever else that the world may say, I don't care. This is wrong because Swami is there. Swami is what, this is what Swami has said. That kind of surrender is absolutely necessary. And I really feel that we need the surrender, and we need God's grace to be able to overcome rajasic obstacles. Because all said and done, sattvic obstacles, since the intent is not malicious, we can even, you know,
explain and kind
yeah,
of,
it becomes right. Little easier to overcome. But a rajasic obstacle becomes little difficult.
Yes, I think the idea of being self-righteous actually comes even in the second one. Especially, you know, when you talk about peer pressure, you would always find this. And people asking, are you greater than us? You know, just because you don't indulge in this habit or you don't indulge in this, like us, are you greater? Especially a lot of our boys face that, you know, when they go out, social drinking is a norm in the corporate. You're expected to do such things. And the way boys have to handle it, Swami would often say this, you know, you'll have to win them over a period of time. You cannot confront them and say that, yes, this is what is right and this is how it has to be done. You know, you can have that conviction inside, but the way you present yourself would have to be with a lot of yukti, with a lot of, intellectual gymnastics too. There's that famous incident. I'm not sure who the famous personality is. Apparently an Indian scientist who goes abroad.
Can I take over?
Sure.
Are you... I think by chance, if you're referring to C.V. Raman,
I think
Sir C.V. Raman came up with something called the Raman effect.
Right, I think it's Sir C.V. Raman.
C.V. Right. Raman came up with Raman effect, where you know different liquids would disperse light in different manner, and that was what was studied. So at a ceremony after he won the Nobel Prize, you know, where he was demonstrating this, he was offered alcohol because. The alcohol in the sense that wine, that is the way, that is the norm there in Western societies, and it would be like wrong on his part to say no abruptly. He used his intelligence and you know he came up with an answer. He said, ladies and gentlemen, right now I have shown you Raman effect on alcohol. I would not like you to see alcohol effect on Raman. That was what he said. Yes. Speaking of alcohol, I'm also reminded of a student, you know, where he had this important meet where socially, he had to drink. So instead of abruptly confronting them, what he did was he took the wine in the glass. As he walked around to all the guests speaking, every now and then he would tip a bit of it into a flower pot kept in the side. And at the end of that, his glass was empty. Everyone thought that he had drunk, but he had not drunk and he had not, you know, violated himself with alcohol. I feel this is very... nice what you say, like, Prem, because...
I think that C.V. Raman, probably it's not C.V. Raman, the one I was saying is also a very intelligent use of mind, you know, where this person is confronted and he says you have to drink and all that.
Huh?
So he tells them, I agree to drink with you if you can do what I can do.
Okay.
Okay, and this is a typical Indian scientist. So he picks up a glass of water and he drinks it without sipping, the way we drink when we use a common glass, you know. He lifts the the tumbler and up and drinks it. First of all, Westerners are not used to drinking like that.
Correct.
And on top of it, they're all drunk. And he says that if any one of you can drink your wine the way I drink my water, then I'm ready to drink your drink. And nobody is able to. And, you know, this is what it is. It's like you just kind of intelligently get yourself out of the situation.
Just, you know, I had brought up this thing about Mudanali, the Sukshma Baba. I feel there's a lesson for even those who seem to be opposing the Mudanali mayhem. Because there is a section that is like a brigand, you know, like a revolutionary brigade. Go and, you know, rip it apart, tear it down. As you rightly said, though in our heart we can, you know, get repulsed at the very idea of what they're doing, I feel the way we express it should be tempered with intelligence and in a manner so that we directly on the face, because it's not going to help in a manner of helping the confused souls who are floundering over there, some of them. Of course, there are some hardcore who have masterminded this, that can't be helped. But the floundering souls who are going there, if you just confront them and hit them on their face, it might actually put them off and scare them away. So we have to use intelligence also while facing such rajasic obstacles.
Right. And the third obstacle which he faces is that of a tamasic obstacle. A tamasic obstacle is, there's no black and white there. It's straight away black. It's something wrong which confronts you, which is something which is very harmful. And there is no two thoughts about that. You know, there is no way of circumventing that event. You just tear through it like how Hanuman did. And just like how the first one required humility, the second one requires surrender, the third one requires courage. It's nothing like that. I mean, you're absolutely sure of what you want. You know, there is surrender, there is humility, but there is no compromise. When you know absolutely right what you're going for, and you know that something in front of you is absolutely opposite to what you're going for, you just put all your courage and your intent into it and tear through the obstacle. There's no two ways of doing it.
Absolutely. And, you know, in fact, now when you have mentioned this, again it's triggering me, whether, you know, this collection of money for something, whether it comes as a rajasic obstacle, in a sense it comes as a rajasic obstacle, but for a Sai devotee it comes as a tamasic obstacle, because clearly, you know, in discourses Swami mentions that you are worse than demons if you do this. Don't entertain it anywhere. And in fact, Swami says, I remember during the 50th birthday celebrations, 1975, in that a series of discourses that Bhagwan delivered, which have not yet become, I don't know if all the discourses are there on our site, but definitely they are there in that Sai Blossom product. So in that, Swami clearly mentions, he says, these are some strict things that have to be followed. If you can't follow, don't call yourself Satya Sai, that's all. Call yourself something else. Call yourself Ramesh Organization or whatever you want, but don't call yourself Satya Sai Organization. And Swami says, I don't want these many centers, these many number of temples dedicated to Satya Sai around the world. He says, even if there is one that is enough for us, one temple, one place is also enough, but that place should follow the teachings of Satya Sai. Any place that doesn't follow the Satya Sai doesn't deserve to be called a Satya Sai, you know, center or organization. And so therefore I feel, in certain cases, not in certain cases, when looked in this perspective, this collection of funds, open solicitation of funds, becomes a strict no-no. It becomes a tamasic obstacle where there is no doubt. In fact, the other day I met a person who had been to Mudanhalli. He said that for 20 years he has not come to India. He's been in Australia and he had come to Swami before that, and he was so moved by Swami, he has become part of the organization. He says it was unknowingly that he landed up at Mudanhalli. He was invited. He was taken along by somebody, by a group that is apparently soliciting people. And when he landed up in Mudanhalli, he said, the things that I saw at the end, he said, I was shocked when I was asked, because I am not an Indian, because I am a person living abroad, I was asked to give money. I was shocked, and in fact, he said he was also told as to how much money should be donated. Mm-hmm. When he said he wrote a check for something like 5,000 rupees or something, he was told that there are others of his level who are donating 50,000, 1 lakh. There are people donating in lakhs and you're doing it only in 1,000. He said it felt very, very funny, very embarrassing, and he said he landed up in Prashanti. And he told me that I have gone through the Vidya Vahini exhibition today. I was in tears because I felt this is what Swami is. So, looking back on that, I feel he dealt with the tamasic obstacle the way Hanuman dealt with it. Possibly not ripping through the whole thing, but definitely getting away from that spot as far as possible without thinking of whether he has to please the person, whether he'll be hurting the person, nothing like that. Just jettisoned it and landed up where he felt his heart is.
Right, and even as we go through these lessons, you know, what can you say that the Ramayana is still in context? What more can you say to prove that? Because just a small incident, it's so profound. Swami has mentioned this many, many times in the discourses. You know, each of these episodes are so applicable to our lives, to our day-to-day living, even today. And that is why going through the Ramayana, going through the Ramakatha Rasamayini, especially where Swami highlights some of these things, and the many discourses Swami has given on the Ramayana, is so very important and so very fruitful for us.
We conclude this satsang offering our humble salutations to Hanuman for having been a pathfinder for us, for being our light, to show us what it means to be a true sadhaka, a true devotee, what it means to have absolute conviction in our Lord's name. Hanuman, a monkey, was able to cross the ocean because of the conviction in the Lord's word. Even if the whole world had told him that you are not able to do it, he would have done it because of his conviction in his Lord's name. Dear Hanuman, we pray that we also get that kind of conviction and determination and faith in our Lord, your Lord, who has come in this beautiful form of Sai Rama. With this prayer, we offer ourselves at Swami's lotus feet, thanking him for this beautiful opportunity. We leave you with this bhajan, dear listeners, on the other side of which you will be greeted by Brother Chandu with his segment Love to Love. Thank you.
सियापति रामचंद्र की जय
सिया
सियापति रामचंद्र के जय,
सियापति रामचंद्र के जय,
सियापति रामचंद्र के जय,
पवन सुत हनुमान की जय,
पवन सुत हनुमान की जय,
पराक्रम आंजनेय की जय,
पराक्रम आंजनेय की जय,
पतिपुरी साई नाथ की जय,
पतिपुरी साई नाथ की जय,
पतिपुरी साई